start. Sooners of Oklahoma at 12-0 and still looking for respect nationwide.
What is going on, Sooner Nation? Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of the Barry and Mac Show. As always, myself, Barry, personal trainer, sports performance coach out of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And alongside me, former Sooner wide receiver, 2000 national champ, Mr. Damian Mackey. How are we doing today, D-Mac?
Doing good, Barry. I'm doing well, man. Excited. We're a couple weeks closer. Game week. Officially started camp yesterday, I believe. I got a couple text messages that said camp officially started yesterday. I saw OU post on IG and Twitter, all the guys coming in and doing their weights and all that. You know, they do the big show, right? Where they got all the fireworks and Chavis is out there with his hat backwards and his two short capri pants that he wears. But by the way, it's a swag.
Hey, man. Five inch seam, baby.
No. It's capri pants. It's like four inch high waters. He's got the high waters.
Oh, he's got the capri.
He's about four inches too high on the ankles. I'm a little older than that, but I get it. It looks good.
I like it. I dig it.
Nah, I'm doing well. Good to be back, man. Excited about doing what are we doing today? D-line and receivers.
It's gonna be a blast, man. Before we get into it, want to remind everybody the Barry and Mac Show brought to you by OU Insider. Go to OUinsider.com, get yourself a membership. Brandon and Parker, all the guys do a fantastic job. And I'll say, man, me and you, D-Mac, we've been contributing. If you have not checked out my articles I've done on a lot of the 2025 guys, go over there, check it out. The 10 thoughts, the infamous 10 thoughts is going to be
coming back.
That's right. So if you guys want all of that exclusive content, all the write-ups, interacting with the board, having a good time, just good, friendly folks over there. I will say, you know, one of the things I like about it, that guys go back and forth. There's a little discourse, but, you know, not a whole lot of, you know, personal jabs. You don't get that. You don't get a ton of profanity laced stuff. It's, you know, really good, like, family board with the discourse, like people get after it, but they keep it on the up and up. They shake hands and go their separate ways at the end. But go get a membership, DMAC. We're doing two episodes tonight. We're going to be covering D line and receivers. And since we did O line last time, I felt it was only right that we go to defense on this first part. So tonight we're talking about the defensive line, man. It's kind of fitting because I did my video on CJ Nixon. If you guys have not checked it out, go check it out. Did a full video and write up on CJ Nixon. And I will just say, I think the guy is it. I know Rivals has him as a top 100 player. I'll just say this, and then you guys can go check out the article. I think he's better than that. So without further ado, D-Mac, we're going to preview the defensive line and defensive ends. We're looking at the whole picture. I think that's important when you talk about a Venables defense, a Zach Alley defense. The edge players and the interior players, they all go together, man. Some guys, you are mix and matching, play inside, go outside. Outside guys come inside. A good amount of stunting. That they are a huge factor in whether or not Venables defenses have been successful, right? You go back to defenses of yesteryear. That Venables had success with, right? Yeah, you talked about that last episode. So 2000 with Mike Stoops and BV, a formidable D-line. It was good. It was solid. But 01, you guys elevated the talent, right? You bring in a youngster named Tommy Harris. Dan Cody had plenty of seasoning. You got a Jonathan Jackson, a Jimmy Wilkerson, right? You upgrade the talent. You improve the seasoning on some of the younger guys into that next year, and you go from being a very good defense to probably one of Oklahoma's best defenses of all time in 2001. So just something to think about it as we go into this. 08, 09, same kind of deal. You had a Gerald McCoy who was on that line of scrimmage. And not to say that OU has a Gerald McCoy on this defensive line, But I think the first place to start is just running through the players, and we'll probably let's work outside inside, because I think inside OU picked up some big names this year in the transfer portal that I think will bury to the end. But I'm just going to go down the list right here. So on kind of that weak side, you're looking at a guy I was a big fan of in Caden Woolard. I think Caden Woolard is an absolute killer. I think he is going to be a solid player for Oklahoma. In the spring game, he stood out. Dejon Terry, man in the inside there. Then you've got Dominic Williams, who we will look at, and then Ethan Downs. So let's start with Downs and Woolard, and then I want to get your thoughts on the guys behind him. You're going to have Ford, a mix of RMT. You've got PJ, right? Does PJ have a breakout year? And then you got the youngsters, right? Taylor Wine, he's a guy who people have heard about. He put on some really good quality weight over the offseason. He came in very light, right? Very lean in the tank. So he looks like he's manning the part a little bit. Probably needs one more year, but I bet we'll get some visuals of him this season. Probably see him in at least two or three games, if not a little bit more. But D-Mac, starting with the edge guys, and with OU's performance last year, which was hit and miss at defensive end, right? Well, we talked about it all season on the podcast. If you guys don't know, go back and listen. There were we gave them their due when it was due, but when it came to nut cutting time at certain parts of the season, and those guys were not able to generate pressure and get it done, the criticisms were there. So talk about the edge position, D-Mac, and give us the rundown on how you visualize this whole thing working, what players you see being key contributors in snaps.
Yeah, 100%. In order to give it its proper due, we have to go back 2 years. We have to go back to me visiting OU versus K-State, and I don't remember the damn quarterback's name, but every third down,
Martinez,
right? There it is.
Adrian
kid from
Martinez.
Nebraska, kid transferred in from Nebraska, who we beat the year before as a Cornhusker in Norman.
Yep.
But every third down, one thing that just stuck in my soul was our D line and especially our D tackles. If you remember, it was year one of our pod, and I was like, dude, it looked like they were slow dancing with the tackles. It was like they were literally stuck to the tackles and they couldn't even get half a man pressure, right? And that's Downs, his pup year. And I don't remember who the other DN was. It was an inconsequential starter. No disrespect. But two seasons later, you have guys who have put up really big numbers or have been highly regarded prospects and or recruits who are right in the mix to be guys that they're going to depend on. So I think the easy place to start is Downs. Ethan Downs is a guy who's played a million gazillion snaps. Ethan Downs is a guy who has earned some rep and has done some things on the bright light during the bright lights and then on the big stages. OU Texas immediately comes to mind. And even some other games, man, he played a hell of a game against Kansas, the game we ended up finding a way to lose.
Yeah,
he had a hell of a game that day. So I feel good about having a guy like Ethan Downs as your entrenched end. The thing, though, that's beautiful about our current circumstances, Barry, is that we have so many styles of ends that an Ethan can be a starter who then either spins down or play some other role, or even sometimes probably comes off the field in certain scenarios down in distances or times of the game where you want to get like a NASCAR type group in. He has the opportunity to never leave the field. So I want to start there.
Sure.
I don't want people to misinterpret. I'm going to talk about the O-line. We had a couple of people misinterpret what we were discussing O-line, and I'll address that later. But I don't want people to misinterpret the possibility and the flexibility in which our defense now possesses. If Ethan Downs can, you know, set the edge, disrupt and beat his man, at least half a man on a consistent basis, and go get, you know, a couple of sacks early in the preseason, you know, some games where he's responsible for making the play, right? On our podcast, we talk a ton about schemed up wins, which we can say Venables and Cole do a great job of scheming their players up to be successful, and then being an ass kicker, right? Someone we'd call a dude, someone we'd call a war daddy. And those guys are the people who don't come off the field. Ethan does have the opportunity. I don't know if his ceiling is that high. We'll see. He's played enough football. The game could slow down, right? His grown man strength could be here. He has the opportunity. Okay. So you park Downs. All right. You put Downs on the shelf and you've got RMT and you've got Woolard and you've got PJ and you've got, what's the kid's name from Oklahoma State?
Oh, Trace Ford.
Stud 2 years ago. Right. And you've got the puppies. We're in a position right now. We're just in a 40 front. There are four or five potential guys who either have the reputation like a Woolard, like a Ford, who they've done it in big games. Or you've got the guys like RMT and PJ. That's four dudes over and beyond Ethan Downs. So going into the SEC, it gives me a lot of comfort in knowing we have depth. How many times have we had an oboe or Scott, I don't even know, like one dude. And if that one dude didn't have a matchup where he could win, we weren't going to get pressure unless we schemed up pressure or unless we blitzed. We've got four or five legitimate guys, right? And so that's exciting. If you made me grade or score our defensive end position, I think it has potential to be great. I really do. I think at the defensive end position, because we have depth, we have high ranking players, we have guys who've done it and have experience, right? All three of those are contributing factors necessary to kick ass consistently, right? You can have a Minnesota with one dude who's dope, right? You can have a Whiskey with one DN who's a killer, right? But it takes the LSUs, the Georgias, the Bamas. They have a committee of guys. And I think, listen, the SEC folk talk all their shit, but like Tennessee don't got that. Ole Miss has a good D line this year.
Yeah.
But their D line, I would say in terms of potential, isn't on an echelon over and beyond ours. And so I look at the defensive line unit. I look at PJ. Everyone talks about PJ like he's a guy who's going to be a bust. He was a freshman learning how to play the game in a space where, right, it's his first opportunity to play college football. Let's see what year two gets us. If he makes the jump, folks are in trouble, right? Yeah. Then we talk about RMT. RMT was having a phenomenal fall camp, and then you got a guy falling his ankle second week of camp. He comes into the season week three, week four, and he's trying to play catch up the entire season. Go back and watch the film of his freshman year. He was light. You brought it up a ton. There were five or six times where he was a step away because he was light in the ass and a one-handed jab could get him off his track. He's got 2 years of strength now, right? And by the way, he understands how to attack a tackle. Now, this will be his third year playing on the field. He's got a high ceiling. He's got a ceiling to be a good starter. His ceiling is definitely one that I would say is on par with what Ethan Downs could do. Ethan's just produced more in games that matter. But when you bring a Woolard, listen, and I know I'm taking some of your shine.
Go for like, it, man. We'll talk about it.
He could be the starter. You know, so we're talking about all these other dudes. We're talking about four stars and we're talking about five stars, right? We're talking about transfers who came in from Okie State and were killers, right? Before they started having injuries. But then we have Woolard, and now we're talking about a guy who has the measurables. We're talking about a guy who has his grown man strength. We're talking about a guy who can beat you with speed. Here's the thing about OU's D line, and I think you'll agree with me. I'd say over the last decade, I can't think of two ends we've had that weren't one side of a one-trick pony. Either they were a guy who were maybe a little undersized or maybe a little light in the ass, but could beat you at speed, right?
Yeah.
Or we had big, burly, strong guys who, if they didn't have the most athletic tackle in the world, they could overpower them and get to the quarterback. Woolard is a blend of both. He's a big, strong, long. It's very important for defensive linemen to be long because they take away offensive linemen's levers. When a defensive lineman can match an offensive lineman's levers and lock out on them and take away their ability to lean, they can kick ass. And he has the ability to do it. I have a lot of hope for our D line. I think we need to see them do it. And I think, like, if we're in the Big 12, here's how I'll frame this, Barry. If we were in the Big 12 in this season, we would kick it. It would be more like the OU Sooners of the early 2000s, where there were seven games on the schedule where we're just gonna out physical and kick your ass. Because we're going into the SEC, I don't know, because I don't really have a lot of context for our guys versus their guys yet. But there's no choice but to have optimism based upon what Venables and Co. have done in terms of building depth, competition, and what the eyeball test. Eyeball test, strong B plus. We're a strong B plus for sure at the defensive end position.
Yeah, man, I couldn't agree with you more. I think Ethan Downs has had a Danny Stutzman level jump, right? This past 2 years, I guess, since Venables has arrived. You know, when Venables got there, you know, we had discussed this a lot. I don't think Downs, and this isn't to overly criticize, because I think we've done that enough. I don't think Downs had been in a program and had a plan for him that was good enough to get his speed where it needed to be. I always thought that he was a guy who could develop some strength. He's kind of that slow twitch, gonna, you know, probably gonna beat you in a powerlifting competition, right? Probably gonna deadlift a house, can bench press, can do all these things, but was he explosive? Could he blow past you with a first step? You don't need to have the best first step, but if you're not a threat with your first step at the edge position, you have no inside move. If they're not afraid for you to just beat them off the edge, then that tackle, he knows you're not coming inside.
Right.
He knows that you're very limited in what you can do, right? It's trying to defend a guy who can't shoot threes versus a guy who can shoot threes. The moment that you're having to defend that perimeter, right? That you're having to get up on a guy like a Steph Curry, he doesn't have the most explosive force first step. He doesn't have an Iverson first step, but he's a huge threat to shoot the three ball and to put it in at a high clip.
The
and
best
because
ever.
Of that, the best ever. So because of that, you got to respect it. And now you elevate all these other aspects of his game. And I don't think that there was a plan that was structured around what he needed to be. I don't think the vision of him as a player was there. And I think it came to fruition these past couple years. Of course, he's got to do the work, right? And it seems that he's done that the same way Stutzman has done the work, the same way it looks like RMT has done the work. And we talked about RMT two off seasons ago. You know, I graded him. I thought he was the steal of that class, a three-star prospect coming in. I thought he was an absolute stud. So when I talk about like a CJ Nixon, I got the same kind of feel. I think he's going to be a killer, right? But RMT, that injury, man, it really put him behind the eight ball. And anything lower body on a guy who relies on explosiveness, you know, imagine if Stryker had struggled with ankle sprains, right? He wouldn't have been the Eric Stryker that we came to all know and love. He would have been a guy who, you know, what could have been, right? If you don't have that, you take away that element of your game, which is a huge part of his game, then what do you got? PJ, I kind of talked about him on one of our episodes and have gone into that, but development-wise, I thought there was more room for him to grow. He did show some improvement last year, but even watching high school, I thought from a balance perspective, he needed to get stronger in his core. I thought he was he could get knocked off his base pretty easy. He was so long, and it's almost like he never quite learned how to play with that length. Felt like a guy that almost grew a little too fast. Right. He didn't have a chance to, quote unquote, like develop the point guard skills, if you will, to kind of take it back to basketball a little bit. He got too big and he didn't have that functional movement in order to be a guy who can have that low base, who always has a nice lean going forward. Right. You watch a Downs play, an RMT, Caden Woolard, especially, and I'm about to get to him. Those guys play with a really good lean. They play with strong hands. They play with distance between them and the tackle. They always have their eyes up. They have good vision. They're doing the right things technically. PJ needs that. If he has that jump this year, as you said, he changes it, right? If you have a guy like that who is now an every down or at least high level third down third and medium, third and long, just freight train. You've now got an elite defense with what you've got at backer and what you got at the secondary, right? Because having a guy like him, even if you aren't great at a certain group or at one position, right, he covers up those warts. If you're not great at outside backer or you're not great at corner, right, you're just average. If you have a defensive end who can get home every play and that quarterback, it's 2 to 3 seconds and that ball's got to be out or else you're going down, you change the game. You dictate the game from that point. And to bring it home before we move inside, Caden Woolard, I did some clips, some cut-ups of him that are available over on X. I think he's going to be a stud. I think OU saw him as a player who can contribute right now, similar to a Bothroyd, right? But I think a higher ceiling than a Bothroyd, right? He's a guy who's going to come in, be a factor, be a leader, good attitude, great pedigree, right? His dad is about it. He's a guy who brings a good energy, but unlike Bothroyd, he brings some serious athleticism. To me, it's almost like a microcosm of where OU is in the transfer portal, right? Bothroyd was a really good player and was probably the best OU was going to get a year ago. Woolard is that slight tick up in terms of can do all those things technically that a Bothroyd could do as a senior leader type guy, grown man strength, all those things. But now he's got the athleticism to go with it. He's a guy who can, you know, if he was at the combine next year with other players, he's going to look the part. He's not going to look like a fish out of water. He's going to blend in with all those other guys who are 6'4", 6'5", you know, 260 to 300 pounds, and, you know, just cooking at that position. So Caden Woolard, in my opinion, probably going to be one of the better. I don't want to go as far as I think he'll lead the team in sacks because
who's
going to
beat him? Who's going to beat him? No. Who's going to beat him?
I think it comes down to where's RMT? To me,
still on the RMT train.
I still am there, but I think it's going to be how did they use him, right? Does he turn into kind of a specialist? Is he in every down? Like, how do they? But here's the thing with Woolard. Is he is so good playing the run as well. He has such good length and strength. Some of his highlight plays in the spring game were not pass rushes.
For sure.
They were run plays. Like he could play one gap, two gap. He's a guy who can he is just a solid football player, but also with really good athleticism, covers ground so easy. Like he's super explosive.
I got two questions. Question number one. First play of the season, who you rolling out there? Obviously, camp's going to make a bunch of, you know, there's going to be a lot of shifting and changing. But first play of the season, we're playing Friday night. By the way, there's a rumor going around that a ton of us alumni are going to be in town or they're asking me to come to town. So, by the way, did you ask me to come to town too for that game? Was that the game you told me to come to town
for? Well, Houston. Houston will be there. Okay. Better, yeah. Okay. So, Houston, okay. I won't let the cat out the bag, but there might be also some special stuff going on for that game. Okay. So,
I got a bunch of teammates like, Mac, you got to come to town Friday. So I may be in town. We'll see for both.
All right, man. We'll try and link up.
First game of the season, 40 front. We're not going to do 30 because, you know, he's going to swap into some 30 stuff too. But 40 front, boom. Give me your two ends. Give me your two tackles. We're not doing tackles yet. So just give me your two ends.
Two ends.
First and 10.
That is Downs and Woolard.
Okay.
Downs and Woolard are the two starters.
Okay. First, third, and 11. So third and long.
Okay.
Third and long. The game's not out of hand yet, so they're still having starters play. Give me your down and distance DNs on third and long.
Third and – man, I'm going to go Woolard and PJ.
Really?
Yeah,
interesting.
I think, yeah.
But you think RMT might lead the team in sacks? Come on, bro.
One of the things that I think is going to get RMT in trouble, and this was last year, he doesn't play like an extremely long player.
He lacks length. He actually does lack length for a DN.
Yeah, but he's not short.
Correct.
Right? But you look at, you know, at PJ –
it's relative.
Yeah, it's relative. And PJ's got just, if he can get the technical side down, and this is assuming fall camp, he looks the part, he's doing the right things. Assuming that, PJ should be your guy, right? In my opinion, it should be Woolard. If you have a fully developed Woolard and a PJ who is a killer, you got one of the best edge tandems on third down in the SEC potentially. Like, I'm trying to think who else. Ole Miss did some work in the portal, and then they've also got some studs. They've got some killers. Alabama, I think they lost a little bit. LSU's always got guys, but that's a formidable edge tandem. So same question back to you, 3rd and 11, because I think the 1st and 10, I think we're both probably in agreement. It's going to be Downs and Woolard, or would you say somebody else?
Week 0, I think it's Downs. It's Woolard. It's Woolard. And I kind of know it's Woolard. It's Woolard. My 3rd and long is going to be PJ, and my 3rd down is going to be PJ and RMT. And I think PJ leads the team in sacks. I believe PJ's, this is, I don't want to say make or break. It's not, because he's such a wiry, explosive athlete. He has the ceiling high enough to where the light bulb could come in year 3 or 4 and it could happen for him. But I do believe with his coaching that he's going to make the jump this year. My only reservation, and you kind of said it, but I'm going to kind of consolidate it into layman's terms. He's hippie, or he showed himself to be hippie last year, meaning he doesn't explode through the hips. He kind of has to sit at the hips and then run. And that's that split second that is the difference between meeting and beating hands or being met by hands. And so I want to see, in other words, he doesn't have the natural get out of a D lineman. A guy who comes to mind, and I'm going to show my age here, is Reggie White. Reggie White, when you see him, never looks like he's going to be a guy who can just beat you with speed. And he consistently kicked ass with speed. And then, of course, his 1-2 was the club, and he was literally sitting linemen down on their asses. Oh. But if PJ has learned that skill set where he doesn't waste a half step getting into an explosive stance, his explosion is different than everybody else's.
Yeah.
And it was apparently different even last fall camp. So because I know the coaching we have on that side of the ball and you know how I feel about those position coaches, here's what I do know. That D-line coach operates in tandem. And I would just say the nucleus of both of them makes them superb. And I know that big bro supports little bro and gives him a lot of pointers to help him improve. And so although Chavis has done some on the job training, his recruiting has merited right where he is today in a lot of respects. But the nuanced coaching component, Bates is there too. And Bates knows his shit inside, outside, front and back. So yeah. I expect to see PJ have worked on and corrected that issue because it popped out on film. Like, it was very simple. It was elementary to see. The reason he's not successful is because he's not naturally getting out of his stance. And with an explosive power step, with an explosive reach step, he's kind of taking a step and getting himself settled and then trying to just beat you at natural speed. Yeah. Reps will fix that. And so I am hoping, kind of, by the way, in business, I can't hope. I literally teach my brokers not to hope, but in football, I'm a fan, right? So I can hope.
Yeah.
I hope he spent the offseason, one, gaining 8 to 12 good pounds, which I hear he has, two, working on that very first step. Cause if he has, he's different and he can lead the team in sacks.
Man, a little of it is physics. Like, he needed to get more like girthy in his lower half.
Yeah.
Like he was almost too wiry, right?
Yep.
It was just the physics, the levers aren't. And that's what you talk. One of the things that I saw in high school about him that I was like, he's a really good player. He looks the part. He's super long. But the reason he wasn't at Sweat's level when he went to FSU and was basically a killer from day one, the guy who plays for Philly now, him and PJ are like carbon copies of each other, except Sweat was just thicker. So the the physics of his build, right? He's still a high hip guy, super broad shoulders, looked like he could play in the NBA, still had that look, but was just thicker, was a girthier guy. So the center of mass changes, right? When you're wiry and you're long and lean, you're not as strong. Your center of mass isn't as strong. You don't have as good a balance, right? If your core is weak on top of that, or at least weaker than that tackle you're playing against, and he played against good tackles in the Big 12 last year, right? You had your Kelvin Banks, the guy from LA, or the guy from BYU was really solid. Kansas rolled out a good offensive line.
Yep.
So what, they weren't playing scrubs, and he wasn't losing against scrubs, but he should have been winning more of those battles than he did. So moving inside, this is where I think it gets interesting for Oklahoma. Because at edge, other than Woolard, there's not a lot of new faces, right? It's a lot of the same guys who we know can be successful. Inside, though, you got one big time new face, but we'll save him. Okay, we'll save that. Let me start with the old heads who are going to be there, right? So Dejon Terry, I think, makes the best decision of his career in returning. He's a guy who, when he got to Oklahoma, we heard nothing but good things about him running with Schmidt very, very soon, getting early work in, and it showed on tape, right? Yep. It showed in big games. One of the reasons OU was able to hang around against Texas was because of how he played.
Yep, he played a big first half, huge first half,
and OU didn't have guys like that on the interior, so he was a huge piece, right? You've got a Grayson Halton, who has seemed to have elevated a little bit. He's improved. Jaden Jackson comes in, who I thought was just one of the studs of spring, right? Had a great spring game, going to be a newcomer. You got Devon Sears, who, you know, what we actually were a little skeptical on, but we've heard some decent things about him. And he, again, in the spring game, he looked to have developed a little bit. And then you've got Ashton Sanders. Right. A little bit lower on that depth chart. But again, these are names that have been brought in that OU could run some of these guys out there and probably get some quality snaps against certain opponents. Ashton Sanders obviously isn't going to play a lot when OU plays Alabama or when OU goes and plays LSU, Ole Miss. But against some of these other teams, OU's got some depth to keep guys from being so snap heavy. But moving us into the newcomers, David Stone, everybody knows about him. That is not nothing new there. And another guy everybody knows about, who is going to be, I think, a massive factor, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say about the interior as a whole, but specifically some of the big names, is defensive tackle Dominic Williams, who was the prized portal pickup of the offseason for Oklahoma and really for a lot of teams. There was a lot of teams wanted his services. A lot of teams wanted him in the inside of their defense. He was a guy who at TCU looked the part and played the part. He's got experience in big games. He's got experience winning those one-on-ones in big games. And since coming to OU, I've noticed in some of the photos and just the way he's looked and some of the things that have been put out there, he's also developed physically quite a bit. It seems like he's put in some good work. So hearing those names, D-Mac, a few new faces mixed in with a few old faces. Maybe you wish some other guys would have been able to come back this year, but didn't happen. But Dejon Terry returns. Jaden Jackson, big-time newcomer, guy who has obviously put in some serious work since arriving. How do you feel this interior is going to perform? And who are some of the names you think are going to stand out this coming season?
Yeah, so I'll speak to the group as a whole. You're going to hear me sound like a rerun here. I think the three-year plan that BV had going into the SEC, transfer for us, he's done it the right way. Sanders is a guy who, listen, Sanders is a guy who 7 years ago would be a 1B for sure. Sanders has talent. He's a little undersized. He's a little short-armed, but he has an explosive first step, and he's a smart player. The kid's actually really smart. Grayson Halton would be a starter for us. I'll just say it. Grayson has the best first step on the team. There's some mental, not in the sense of like, insanity mental, but just like mental bust, right? In football, there are guys who are a little bit more prohibitive to bust, and he's a guy who they're wanting to see be more consistent because his ceiling is high. He has the ceiling of a guy who could play on Sundays. He just doesn't have the consistency of a guy who you can depend on to start every series on Saturday. So, right, the floor and the ceiling is both. There's a lot of variance in there, but I'm going in this order with some intention. Obviously, having guys like Sears and Terry is a big deal. You've got guys who have grown man strength, who've been around football for a long time. Obviously, seeing a guy like Terry make the decision to come back it goes back to I'm gonna say this because I'm gonna speak to it at the end of our pod tonight, but it goes back to like Sexton at guard, who all these people were so upset. Guys, we totally expect Sexton to be a left tackle. Just FYI, we were using the context of the conversation about O linemen, about culture guys being willing to move if there's going to be talent spread out. So I'll address that later. But a guy like Sears coming back is a culture move, right? It's been long known that OU, any guy on the defensive side of the ball that had a chance to go to the league, 9 out of 10 times, they weren't coming back to create quality depth or returning starter depth. They were going and trying their luck at a cup of coffee in the league. And a guy like Sears fits that mold to the T. He's a guy who could have left last year and is probably in somebody's camp today. But because the culture has changed, he's a guy who now says, bump that, I'm coming back. We've got great opportunities. I like it here. Let me say that. I like it here. Barry, there's a lot of guys, even when I played, there's a lot of guys who loved this. They loved that interlocked OU, but didn't like it. Does that make sense?
Interesting.
Right? You date a girl because you like her. You marry a woman because you love her. But when you marry someone and you love them, you don't always like them, but you don't leave. If you got a girlfriend and you like her and fall in love, but now you're no longer in love, you ain't got to stick around because you don't like her anymore. A lot of players at OU left a year early because they didn't like the culture. So when you see a guy like Sears say, hey, man, I love OU. He's a guy you could tell he loves that interlocked OU. I think he's going to speak to his career as a Sooner more so than his prior experiences before us, but he genuinely likes the culture. That's a huge shift. Like, we just don't have examples of guys choosing to do that who could have gone to the league. Does that make sense? If there were guys who
100%.
weren't ready yet, then they stick around because they weren't, they didn't get the score or the grade or whatever, right? But if he's a guy who could have left and been in someone's camp right now, probably $500,000, $1 million, whatever the case may be, he decided to stick. That's a huge deal because, like you said, big games. He played big in some big games. He, by the way, he got better as the year progressed. He's a
Yeah,
guy
he
who
was
was
a good
making improvement.
player.
And that speaks to our D-line coach, right? When we're talking about the defensive tackle position, we can firmly and unequivocally say we have a top three or four defensive tackle coach in America. Recruiting, tactician, technician, teacher, motivational guy, all the different aspects of the position that are required to go out and produce talent. We got it in Bates. So in poetry, I guess. So
Poetry.
Sears
He
is a
does.
critical.
He's rapping, man.
He, by the way, he kills me sometime on X. But Sears is a guy that's going to be a pitch they're going to be able to sell for the next 5 years. We had a guy who could have left who stayed, and especially if he levels up this year. But I'm gonna throw a monkey wrench here in a second. But he's critical. So we spoke about Sanders, we spoke about Halton, we talked about Sears with Terry's quality depth, good for him. Sticking around, he's a guy who couldn't have left last year, right? So, right, we'll see. Did I say Terry or Sears? I'm talking about Sears now. Williams is obviously, we are looking at him to be the next in the long line of defensive tackles at the University of Oklahoma who are flat out difference makers, war daddies. And I just remember seeing when we played against him and how he was handling business against us and against a bunch of other teams. He's a guy who on third and long can play the zero. And on first and 10 is going to kick ass at the three. And so seeing him being a guy that provides that diversity, seeing him be a guy who, when the perfect schemed up play isn't dialed, he can just go win. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
But I've got one more to discuss. My guy, and I called this, by the way. I called it in spring. I called it in spring.
Okay.
And he had a killer spring game. And damn it, I'm owning this one. And if he sits at the end of the bench, I'm going to be sad and I'm going to be in my feelings. But Jackson, he's in my starting group. He's a freshman. And so you've got a guy like Terry, who's fifth year, sixth year, whatever year he is, right? I think week zero, they roll Terry out. But Jackson's a guy you're not going to be able to keep off the field. Jackson's a guy who's going to humble Stone, because Stone's going to be a stud for us in a year or two. And he's going to be quality depth this year. He's going to play. And by the way, he's going to have some wild plays because his athleticism is off the charts. But Jackson is a junkyard dog. And he's a student of the game. He's the guy no one's going to talk about. And he's the guy that teams aren't like, he's not on anybody's bulletin board. From every indication and rumor and conversation that I've had, Barry, I didn't even know who the kid is. People were like, yo, Maggie, you know, there's this, you know, Jaren Jackson. I was like, who? I didn't even know who he was. Like, who is it? Yeah. And then I see a scrimmage and they can't block him. And then in the spring game, or maybe it was the scrimmage before the spring game. I mean, he was the best player on the field. And then in the spring game, he had a great spring game too.
Great spring
game. He's a guy, his lower trunk is so strong. And his first step is, it's not even about quick. It's about instinct. See, Tommy was quick and instinctual, which was cheating. And by the way, strongest guy on the team with a barrel chest. So he had all the attributes.
But he's a generational dude.
Like yeah.
Tommy had a decade.
Correct. Jaren Jackson has the instinct, and he's a puppy, and he has the lower base strength to just disrupt. He's going to disrupt on most plays just because he can beat you by that half inch. And so Jaren Jackson's a 1A. I'm just telling you. And maybe I'm saying his name wrong, whatever. But I'm just telling you.
Jaden Jackson.
I keep saying Jaren.
I didn't even know that. Yeah, Jaren plays for Memphis. Yeah, he's a Memphis Grizzly.
Totally. I was going to say basketball. He's a guy. And then obviously you're talking about Stone. Stones are very important to the culture of the program, just like a PGA is very important to the culture of the program, because you have to show proof and evidence that your five stars can come and play. He's going to get every opportunity to be successful. I wouldn't even be surprised if there are some like bias situations where they want him in so he can get a sack, so he can have some hoopla, so he can have some stats, because you got to tell the next five star that your current five star is successful. And so I'll talk about my starting units, because generally it's four dudes and then there's like one on the cusp dude and then there's twos.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about what those guys are after you give your assessment.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm pretty right along there with you. You know, one play that stands out with Jaden Jackson in the spring game was there was a play. Golly, man, what was it? I want to say it might've been a pass. It might've been a run play. It was something weird, but they try to cut him. You can't cut him.
No.
He's so, as you said, he's so strong in his lower half. He's not small. He's not a short, like he doesn't look extremely long in photos and he doesn't look real tall, but he's not a little guy.
Correct.
Right? He's got some size to him and a little bit of length to him as well. You look at him next to Stone and you're like, oh, okay. And look at him in a picture on his own. He's got that kind of Samoan big bone build, right? He's got the long hair flowing. He's got the look. He's got it down pat. But his center of mass is so low that his center of gravity is so low that you cannot knock him over. He's literally a pit bull playing inside. And as you spoke to, he's a guy who can play over the center, right? He can play in the gap. He's got some explosiveness to his game. He is not going to be the most explosive, but he's a guy who can certainly be a factor on that side. But yeah, I'm totally in agreement. I think you have a good problem. Think about this. Think about this three-man rotation. Which one of these guys in a 30 can you put out there? You're going to be able to roll out a Williams, a Jackson, and by the way, you now have a recipe for an actually good 30 front.
Front.
So, which was what you talked about it when Venables got there and OU tried to do it against Nebraska, and it was successful because they had the advantage talent-wise over Nebraska, defensive line to offensive line. And then when they played a team like K-State, who had some better offensive linemen, they were more talented, and now those guys who won against Nebraska couldn't win anymore, will now run that 30 front, have that extra guy in there, able to bring pressure or put him back in coverage, but now do it with a formidable defensive line who can win on every play. You've changed the game. And now you've got Clemson circa 2017, 2018, where you could just mix and match whatever you want to do. Dexter Lawrence, Shaq Lawson, however you want to run that, you can move guys all over the place. And then that's not even to talk about a guy like a Danny Okoye, a Taylor Wine, other guys who are going to potentially be factors on the edge, factors at outside backer, just factors in pass rush scenarios. Now OU's got some options. That Terry and Williams are probably your guys just off of the seniority that they run out there early. We've seen OU really respects that. Venables really respects it. And it seems that that was something missing towards the end of Riley's regime that was brought back, was just that respecting what the guys in the program have done, right? The guys who are already there when those freshmen arrive, respecting that seniority and that excellence that has been put forth. But give me your the so we did the edge, but give me your, if we're gonna go like snap count by the end of the season, who are the guys in your four down? Who are the four players who you think take the lion's share of the snap counts across the defensive front?
Gonna be Dominic, it's gonna be Terry, it's gonna be Jackson, and it's gonna be Halton or Stone. All right, in a 30 front, it's gonna be Dominic, it's gonna be, I think it's, man, I listen, first things first, Caden is the reason the 30 front is going to be very dangerous, because you've got a guy who can literally just say, hey, I'm going to line up outside the tackle, or I'm going to line up inside the tackle and have the overhang on that side, and we're going to put pressure like hell coming off, it's going to be bats out of hell, and he can win. He's stout enough to hold the edge, and then he's explosive enough to be a threat. That's going to be a big difference. Bothway just didn't have the explosion. If he had a matchup where he could manhandle you, he'd kick ass. But if he had a matchup where the talent was equal, he could get neutralized. But in the 30 front, I think, man, it's going to be fun, because I think Jackson's a guy where in that 30, listen, he's giving me Kelly Gregg vibes. He gives
Oh,
me Kelly
interesting.
Gregg vibes. He gives
That's
me
a good
KG
call.
vibes. He gives me KG vibes. And so I need to see it on Saturday. I actually got to see KG when he was the man, and same body structure. Kelly was not a small guy, but he was a small guy when you looked at him versus the other guys, but he was a freaking grown man. And so that 30 front, it's going to be fun, because you're going to have Dominic, you're going to have Woolard, and I think that third spinner, that third down, is going to be a plus. I mean, it could be Grayson Halton, dude. Listen, Grayson's 300 pounds. He was 270 when he got here. He's gained 25, 20, 28, 29 real pounds. It's not fake, and he still got that step.
He
He's a
looks
guy.
good.
He's If he can keep his head, he's going to be a factor. I'm telling you, people are not, he's not a guy who people have a lot of faith in, because he was never highly ranked, and he's done some knucklehead. I mean, he's the reason RMT wasn't available the first third of the season. I wouldn't say that, but him rolling up on RMT is the reason he was injured. But he's a guy who has a lot of talent. So that D tackle position, give me Terry, give me Dominic, give me Halton and Jackson, and then give me Stone as a guy who's going to be, they're going to give him every opportunity to be in the mix with those guys. Sears is going to be quality depth. Ashton Sanders is a guy who has potential, but I think he's a program guy. Watch next year. Watch next year when people like Terry graduate. Sanders is going to be a guy who's been simmering, slow cooking. He'll have another 8, 9 pounds, a little bit more grown man strength. He's got some skills, and he'll be a guy who can step up and be someone you can count on to be, I'd say, a plus contributor.
That's good stuff. I totally agree. You said earlier at the start of the podcast to bring things full circle was a lot of fans wanted Venables to go into the portal when he got there and to try and fast track this
Yep.
thing to success.
The
And
Lincoln Riley effect. We were accustomed to Lincoln style, and we went the totally separate approach.
totally separate approach. And there were growing pains with it. You saw some growth, serious growth in year two, the last season, right? The defensive line looked, they weren't where they need to be, but they looked a lot better. And we've seen that you just do not win a national championship by doing it that way, because you never have enough depth, is if that is what you're relying on. You never have enough guys who are good players. Right, when OU played Alabama in 2018 and when OU played Georgia in 2017, the one thing, and the transfer portal wasn't what it is now, but you could even go LSU in 19 and then Alabama even, or in 20 when they won it COVID year. It wasn't even about the studs. It was about number three and four coming off the bench who can give you a good second and eight, right, to let the other guy rest. Or give you a good series to let the other guy rest, where you go out there, you know, it's five plays and you're out, and there the guy had a breather, right? That is such a factor to championship football. And having guys who are culture setters in your system is such a factor. So yeah, good point. I mean, having Sanders on a 3-year plan, having guys like Grayson Halton on a 3-year plan. Right, it takes that long to get right, especially if you're a project type contributor. If you're a guy who's just going to take some seasoning, it's all about having a plan. And speaking of having a plan, next episode we're covering wide receivers, and in that, I think D-Mac's also going to have some words for folks. Actually, you want to do this on this pod? Talk a little offensive line,
Well,
just about
I just want to clarify, guys. I want to
unpack
clarify.
that a little bit
I want to
before we get out
clarify,
of
right?
here.
And guys, you got to understand something, right? When we shoot this pod, like, we're not like, we don't have like producers and scripters and right. We went on, it wasn't a tangent. We stayed on the conversation of addressing the offensive line and what if Sexton is a guy who plays guard? Because by the way, the facts are the facts. They have three tackle good guys, and everyone keeps saying, "Oh, we're good on the inside." Well, we don't know that for sure yet,
We
right?
don't know that.
Anytime,
Yeah.
your center graduates or leaves, there's some unknowns there. You got to find that mixture. We got some returning guys, but I promise you this: if you got three tackles, and those three tackles are three of your best five, those three tackles are going to be on the field. And so, for the individuals who are like, Sexton is penciled in, he's this. No, that's not necessarily true yet. And maybe Sexton as the third guy, as a guard, is better for the unit as a whole than pushing Sexton at left tackle and having a third caliber tackle that can't play guard on the bench while your guards suffer. So I
Yeah.
just want to provide context as it relates to what we were discussing. We were not saying in any way, shape, or form that Sexton has to play guard. We were just addressing the idea of a culture guy who says, hey, I am willing to, if needed, because it's not like he's going, I mean, I guess I can't say that either, but like, he probably wants to put 2 year good years on film before he wants to go to the league if he wants to be a first round guy. And there's
Yeah.
no precedent that says if you play 1 year at guard and kick ass and then you bump out to tackle and kick ass, they're going to penalize you. So if he made that decision, it also makes logical sense. So for individuals, I mean, some dude wrote like a dissertation and I'm like, bro, like we were just making a point about being a program guy who's
Yes.
willing to be flexible for the needs of
Yeah.
the team. If he's the best left tackle, dude, it's the first position that you want to address on the offensive line. He's gonna play left tackle. So
Yeah.
I just wanted to speak to that. I thought it was kind of, and I went back and listened to the pod and I was like, did we say he's gonna be? I said, we never said that.
Nah,
We were
we're not
just
predicting lineups here. Yeah.
addressing, some rumors and some information that's saying, hey, it's a possibility because some of the transfers coming in. What's the guy you like? What's his name? The right tackle that you like? You said, hey man, he could be a potential. Somebody was like, he's not. Tarkin, right? Like, dude,
Tarkin's a player.
he's
He's pretty good.
legitimately gonna get a chance to start.
He's
So,
legit.
yes,
Yeah,
it
he's legit. He can play.
Yes.
And like the last year, you know, you had Caden Green playing guard. Caden Green can also play tackle, but if
It's
he's your third best tackle, put him at guard. If he can play guard and knows how to play guard, knows how to, it's a little bit different fighting in there. You're not playing in space as much. Drew Samia could have played tackle. Like Drew Samia
100%.
wasn't. So, but at guard, he was a superstar, right? He was a guy. So Drew Samia on this team might be your right tackle.
Possible. Definitely. And here's the other
Like,
piece. Here's the other piece, Barry. Tackles who have shown they can kick ass at guard, but are just good enough at tackle, make way more money than a tackle who's never shown they can play guard, who's just regular degular. So again, there is value in showing versatility, right? NFL teams can only have 7 or 8 offensive linemen available on game day. Therefore, they want versatility. So it doesn't hurt Sexton to say, hey, man, if it's a value add to the team and my competition at tackle is fierce and I end up playing guard for this season for the sake of the team so we can kick ass going into the SEC, but he also shows he has tackle skill. If he's not a top 10, 15, 20 tackle anyway, his stock still goes up because he shows NFL teams he's a value add at the guard position and a value add at the tackle position. Guys, that makes sense. But I digress in saying there's a great possibility he's going to be your left tackle, and it's a non-issue anyway. But I just think it's funny. I checked the pod comments, and I didn't read the whole. But I mean, Buddy left like a he left a thing, and he was telling us
He
like,
took
"How
care.
dare you?" And I said, "Bro, we were just
I love it, man. That's awesome. Yeah, just talking ball, man. Well, want to thank everybody for listening. As we said, wide receiver is going to be next. We're going to hopefully get these things released out consecutive days. But thank you all for listening. Make sure to go to OUinsider.com, grab yourself a membership, go over to the social media, follow DMAC on X at D underscore Mac 13, Dame That Dude on Instagram, follow me at BWise Fitness at letter BWISE Fitness. And yeah, grab yourself a membership over there, follow us on the media, and make sure you are subscribed to the audio version. Spotify and Apple and Google Pods and all, we're everywhere, man. Everywhere you can listen to podcasts, make sure you're listening. One, it helps us. Please leave a rating and review. But also, it's just a good spot, man. I don't always watch the pods on YouTube when I listen to podcasts, and I'm a consumer of podcasts. I listen to them all the time, though. So, and I'm usually listening on Apple or Spotify, one or the other. If it's in the gym, it's on Spotify. If it's in the car,
It's on
it's on
Apple.
Apple. It's on
So
Apple. It just.
I'm a turncoat, bro. I'm a turncoat. I listen to everything on Spotify. I listen to everything on YouTube now. Screw Spotify. Screw Apple. I don't even look at the numbers
That's
anymore. I'm a
hilarious.
YouTube guy 100% now.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, we still do better numbers on our audio, which is crazy. But YouTube, salute to everybody who's listening and plugging in.
It is crazy, man, how many people love the YouTube. They had wanted the show on YouTube for a minute. It just we never wanted to do it without the right production and level of quality, and you know, OU Insider brought some of that. So we'll get on out of here, hop into this receiver discussion. Thank you
Let's
all
do
for
it.
tuning in, and we will see you soon. All right, let's hit.